much things to say. They got so much things to say right now. They got so much things to say. Hey, but I'll never forget no way. They crucified Jesus Christ. I'll never forget no way. They sold Marcus Garvey for rice. I'll never forget no way. They turned their back on Paul Bogle. Hey, hey. So don't you forget who you, who you are and where you stand in the struggle. They got I and I do expect to be justified by the laws of men, by the laws of men. Oh, jury found me guilty, but proved, truth shall prove my innocence. Oh, when the rain falls, all fall now, people fall and one man's house stop. Remember that. When the rain falls, it won't fall on one man's house stop. They're singing.
And good evening, CKLN listeners. You are listening to Word of Mouth Mondays here on 88.1 FM, CKLN.FM online, and Rogers Cable Box 947. Special thanks to Curtis for the most soulful sounds you'll find in this city. And so shout out to him for doing a great job. Hopefully you're all in the mood. Started off mixtape track here, So Much Things to Say, so sorry the end of that was a little truncated. But they do have so much things to say right now. And who did Bob mean by so much things to say 30 years ago? Well, he meant, you know, the system, the establishment. And so, you know, what he tried to do. And I'm riding for Bob, by the way. I know some people think he's cliche or he's just for smoking pop. And now I listen to this dude. He said some of the smartest stuff ever. He went to the mountaintop. He found some stuff, brought it down, and said, here, take it. And so we don't have to climb the mountaintop. We just got to listen to some of the smartest people in history and some of the smartest people today who can interpret the world in ways that benefit us. On the phone with me for today's interview show is one of the smartest people today, selling the work of one of the smartest people today, or, you know, less cavalierly, providing the work for you to enjoy, to consume, to pass on. And that would be Patrick from Conspiracy Culture at conspiracyculture.com. Patrick, can you hear me?
VJ, I can hear you loud and clear, brother.
Wonderful. Great stuff. Patrick White, W-H-Y-T-E, is the proprietor of the Conspiracy Culture book, DVD, and more store at Queen and Roncesvalles in downtown Toronto. And for all the people out there that, you know, quote-unquote, don't believe this stuff, Patrick's been in business for 5 years, has a loyal and dedicated customer base, and he and his wife run a very, very slick, beautiful, warm, and welcoming store. Very, very classy, very professional, nice big glass windows, clean, organized, and so he's done a great job. So, Patrick, first of all, thank you for providing this information to the people of Toronto.
BJ, thank you very much for the kind words, and thank you for the opportunity to talk to your audience.
No problem. Let's establish your you know, good guy cred. Your cool dude street cred. Because I've known you for must have been, you know, at least 10 years, on and off. Obviously, we've come in and out of touch, but both of us used to party, and we still do at times. But we also take on the challenge of understanding the truth behind the, you know, illusions we're often given to work with. So tell us a bit about yourself.
Well, you know, it's like you say, we've known each other for about a decade. We met through mutual friends in the, I guess you could say, underground rave scene back in the day. And since then, I guess we've both morphed into more mature interests. And, you know, just like anybody else, I was just at home on the day of 9/11 watching the insanity unfold live on the television. And everything changed for me. And what I was being told by the mainstream media and the government and whatnot just didn't make sense compared to what I was actually watching. So it just basically led me to do a lot of digging and a lot of research on various different subject matter. And through my search, I realized that in the city of Toronto, you know, which is North America's fourth largest market, there's an absolute void of this type of material that people are seeking out. So just through lack and through necessity, we decided, you know, my wife and I decided, you know, why not? Let's just open a small little mom and pop shop here in the city. The doors will be open, so when anybody's ready to come in and just sort of like browse this alternative type of material, it's here for them. And that's basically what we've done.
Absolutely. And with respect to that, you're even getting some support from the mass media, who, it's in my opinion, is that most people are good people. They just know where they work. You know, a lawyer can't wear track pants to work, and journalists can say and can't say certain things, but they do try. And I've seen wonderful write-ups on you in the Globe and Mail, recently for iMagazine, one of the co-sponsors of Freedom Fest this year. They had a picture of the Masonic pyramid at the police station near Yonge and College or Bay and College, and a little article on you kind of saying, look, there is something behind the scenes going on that, you know, we have to find a way to make peace with, at least, and figure out and deal with. And you also had a great little TV spot on City TV, and they basically listed a whole bunch of things you believe, and we believe, by extension, the people that look into these areas, independent and independent-minded, almost too independent-minded to work together often enough, but that's certainly a jury-style proof of you know, how, you know, we came to this information separately as individuals using our good sense. Tell us a bit about your interactions with the media, with the people who come to your store, and what's been going on?
Well, when we first opened up in 2006, the majority of the media was pecking at us just out of sheer curiosity, just trying to figure out who we are, where we were coming from, what we were about, what we were offering. And, you know, they would come down to the shop to interview us. And after about 20 minutes, half an hour, they realized, wow, these guys are, you know, as sane can get. Just normal, ordinary people who just have a curiosity about things that aren't typically discussed, you know, in the mainstream. And for the most part, they realize what we're trying to do. And what that is just make sure that this type of material is available to the Canadian populace. So it's, you know, it's completely up to the people whether or not they're going to find their way into the shop. But we are just making sure that this material is available. So, you know, again, the media, I guess, appreciates what we're doing. They realize that we're unique, and we haven't really gotten any bad press. So I think we've done well in that regard.
Absolutely. Patrick, tell us a bit, just for people out there, it is prime time here on CKLN Radio, 88.1 FM, CKLN.FM, and Rogers Cable Box 947. We may be jumping the gun here because we're a couple of old friends who know the same things. What is going on? Why do you have a store called Conspiracy Culture? What is a conspiracy culture? You know, what is the conspiracy, without going into the, you know, the whole thing? But just give people an idea of why you decided to do this with respect to what's actually going on versus what most of us know.
Oh, brother, there's two separate realities that exist out there. There's the one that we're told by the mainstream corporate-controlled media, and there's a completely other side to everything. And, you know, it's like Jordan Maxwell and others get into the etymology of it, and it's like television programming. So these guys have a mandate that they need to fill, and they've got advertisers that they need to please. So they're not necessarily giving us the whole story, not even half the story for the most part. So what we do is we make sure we've got books, videos, magazines, all sorts of different materials that give in-depth, exposure on a lot of these alternative ideas that exist today. You know, we've got stuff on alternative health, alternative science, politics, religion, secret societies, tons of material on the occult and the esoteric, you know, even some material on cryptozoology and the whole alien UFO phenomenon. So just anything that most people would consider outside the box.
Absolutely, and you know, you don't judge, you just offer, and you certainly have your own opinions on these issues. I recall you saying one of your favorite conspiracies is the JFK conspiracy, the assassination of President John F. Kennedy on November 22nd, 1963, where a sitting president at a parade was assassinated in front of everybody with Secret Service agents there and in suspicious circumstances by supposedly Lee Harvey Oswald, a lone gunman from a few hundred yards away with a gun that possibly couldn't shoot straight at that distance. But can you tell us why that's your favorite conspiracy, if it is, or tell us about your thoughts on your faves?
Well, it's just so grand in everything that it encompasses, you know. It's and for me, I guess it's like they always refer to it. It was the age of the lot, like the lot, like the end of the age of innocence. There we go. So it basically was like a focal point in American culture where people in general started to actually pay attention to what was going on with their government. You know, they had basically just lost faith in the system that was supposedly put in place to protect them. And now it was a moment where it was like, oh my goodness, how does this happen? How does something like this take place under our very noses? So it was, you know, I appreciate the moment in that sense where it sort of, you know, put a fire under the populace and actually had people collectively start to pay attention to what their government was doing to them.
Absolutely. And you know, people have been, people have suggested, you know, people who look into this reality, and there have been people who've confirmed and reconfirmed and rediscovered and cross-referenced this information for decades, since the 1960s, since even before that. It was fairly, you know, there were many of them, you know, 40, 50 years ago. Now there's millions of people worldwide. If a jury of 12 people takes 2 weeks to look at evidence and says, you know, that guy should go to jail and have his freedom taken away, then we believe that. And we trust that. And worldwide, there's got to be at least a jury of 12 million people who've looked into this stuff for at least 2 years, who say, yeah, there's a conspiracy going on. It's the most common charge in any court of law. It just means people try, you know, deciding to do something illegal in secret. And since the 1960s and the Kennedy assassination, that's when most people see that as the watershed moment when the quote unquote shadow government working behind the scenes for offshore bankers and secret societies and think tanks really took over. In 1961, Eisenhower warned us, the previous president, of the military-industrial complex in his farewell speech from office. And then Kennedy took over and tried to do a few good things for the people. And just as we were maybe about to get something done with a popular president who had popular support, they took him out. So what are your thoughts on that? Is that when they made their big move?
Well, I mean, just I can't help but laugh when you think about who was put in charge of the Warren Commission. I mean, you had the Dulles brothers, who are so deeply entrenched into the CIA, and just weeks prior, you had John F. Kennedy telling them that he wanted to splinter the CIA into 1,000 pieces. So it's funny that these people were put in charge of, you know, basically conducting the commission over JFK's assassination.
Yeah,
the
guys
who show you who's really in charge, right?
The guys who founded the CIA were in charge of the commission to investigate Kennedy's assassination right after he said he wanted to shatter them to 1,000,000 pieces.
Oh, absolutely. It's hilarious.
Absolutely. Well, Patrick, with respect to the store, tell us a bit more about that. Tell us a bit more about, again, where it's located, the website, the phone number, what people can find there, what are the hot items, because We are working in a culture in some ways. I know I give you like 8 questions at once. You just pick your favorite. But you know, we do live in a culture where we trust other people. And so if people say, hey, that's a good restaurant, we'll go there. Or if people say a lot of people, you know, think and feel this, we might be inclined to. And certainly the media and whoever uses polls to control our opinions. So tell us a bit about the store and what's hot.
Well, we're located at 1696 Queen Street West. We're just a little bit east of Roncesvalles on the north side of Queen. It's like you were stating earlier, it's a nice little spot, very clean, very welcoming. We've got books, DVDs, magazines on a whole myriad of subjects. Basically anything that you could, you know, hear on stuff like Coast to Coast, stuff you hear on Alex Jones, stuff you hear on Spaceman, stuff you hear on Red Ice Creation, stuff you hear on your program. Anything that would, you know, be considered slightly conspiratorial, paranormal, esoteric, occult. I guess our main focus here, though, is all things geopolitical. So, you know, if you're into anything from Bigfoot to Blavatsky to stuff by Anthony Sutton, Michael Cremo, you know, we've got predictions and prophecies. We've got stuff on genetically modified food, chemtrails, mind control, sex slaves, you name it, bud. It's like what you won't find in your Chapters Indigo, you're definitely going to find here.
Absolutely, and I have checked Chapters Indigo, and the Teen Read Choice Awards, the Teen Read Awards, the whole section of everything that's up for a teen award is all vampires and zombies and the odd whatever. So, ladies, if you find yourself out there dating a vampire, it might be something you read. And that's the problem with just going along with the mainstream reality is that, you know, if you're complaining a lot, it's probably something you know, mentally ate. And if your kids are giving you, or, you know, if your kids are more trouble than they are fun, it might be something you're feeding them or something that you're allowing them to eat either physically with respect to GMO foods and glucose, fructose and sugar and all that, or mentally with respect to the toxic elements in our culture that they can reject. So you have stuff at your store that can kind of help people, you know, figure out what to reject and what to keep and even to... and you can speak to this, but even to allow them to keep what they like, but maybe mitigate some of the effects, if there are any negative ones, of that on them.
Exactly, or find an alternative choice. So it's a great starting point for people who are looking for information on all these different subjects that VJ discusses on his program. So it's, you know, we've got introductory type material, we've got intermediate material, we've got completely academic stuff. So it's a broad range of information for anybody and everyone. And if you're curious and you're interested in the truth, regardless of what facet of life interests you more, we've definitely got something for you here.
Fantastic. What are most people interested in? I know you have a wide variety of stuff there. And certainly people, you got repeat business as people get more and more into, you know, sort of waking up from, you know, why we have a lot of problems and why we aren't relating well to, you know, figuring out who's behind our socialization, clearing their heads and choosing to make, you know, better choices. But regardless of that, you know, people like, you know, like fun stuff too. I mean, I like history, you know, I like the esoteric stuff. But I also know that, you know, that things like health information and modern information, and geopolitical information can help us reject big things like, you know, big poisonous, you know, grocery lists and big evil wars, which are being sold, like the agitation for another one with Iran that's been going on for like 5 years. They're so damn dangerous. Why take 5 years to deal with these people? Like, I don't take fight. They take Patrick. Patrick's dangerous. Me and him, you know, we thought about fighting for 5 years. Like, it's crazy. What are people looking for, you know, at your store?
Well, it's like anything. If something happens out there and people are curious, they come in and they're looking for specific material on that particular subject matter. For example, when we had the whole H1N1 type thing, we had people coming in nonstop looking for information on all things regarding vaccinations and the risks involved and the ingredients and what type of problems it could cause them down the road. So, you know, a lot of what's hot depends on what's going on out there in society. But generally, most people are coming in and looking for information that would help them understand the financial situation and why we're constantly in debt and why money is debt and why there's so much usury and lack and scarcity. And people are coming in trying to make sense of why the leaders that we've got that are supposedly elected on our behalf are doing absolutely nothing to protect us from these types of things. So it's, you know, again, it's generally just political stuff, but when things happen in the world, you know, people kind of want to make sense of it and get some alternative information on it.
Absolutely. When everyone's telling us to get vaccinated, well, everyone in the sense of the media and the government and their agents in the medical industry and so on, people can drop by Conspiracy Culture or visit conspiracyculture.com to say, you know, is there another side to this? And frankly, it doesn't hurt anybody out there to look into the other side. Nobody should be afraid to hear anything. And if it's stupid, have a good laugh. And there is some stupid stuff in Conspiracyville. There's no doubt about that. I've laughed at it. But if it's smart and it makes sense, then enjoy it. Appreciate it like you would anything else. And if you think it can help somebody else, then by all means, pass it on. And to listeners out there, it is Word of Mouth Mondays here on CKLN Radio. We are speaking with Mr. Patrick White, W-H-Y-T-E, proprietor of the Conspiracy Culture book and DVD store at Queen and Roncesvalles here in downtown Toronto. The website is conspiracyculture.com. And I am on your website here, Patrick, because I know that you, you know, you every day, you know, you diligently post interesting articles for us on your website, sort of like in almost an RSS feed from your head to the planet Earth. And this is Patrick communicating. This is what I found interesting, and I think you will too.
Yeah, we scour the net and basically pull news stories that are tucked away in the back of websites and whatnot and bring them to the forefront. So like you're saying, every day we've got a big fat collection of news stories that make it to our front page that will give you alternative perspective on the daily ongoings.
Well, since you do that, Patrick, you know, what's in the news? What's hot right now? What have you discovered that you've found interesting or that you think is worth sharing on our publicly owned airwaves?
Oh, well, I mean, my head's still trying to get over the whole G20 shenanigans that we experienced a few weeks back. I can't believe, you know, we definitely failed the litmus test, definitely very apathetic. And I think a lot more of us should have been out there protesting the police action. But, you know, a lot of the stuff that seems to be making the news headlines these days is, you know, again, those pesky chemtrails that we see in the sky, the barium, aluminum, polymer fibers. You know, people more and more seem to start, you know, realizing that it's a lot more than just a conspiracy theory. It's very real. They see it in the skies every night. And I guess that seems to be, you know, I'm just looking at some headlines now, and that seems to be all over the place.
Absolutely. And with respect to the G20 and G20 martial law, you know, I was out there and I did a lot of work on that on the radio and on the streets. And I will say this, in fairness, our language is structured in such a way where we say, you know, why did the police do that? And I'm not talking about you specifically. I'm just saying in our culture, why did the police do this? Why did the police do that? And I know that the police do what they're ordered to. And I know from living in this city my entire life that the police don't act like they acted at the G20. You know, no Canadian in their right mind would rush a crowd of people singing "Oh Canada" right on cue as they finished. But if 100 of them get a little command in their earpieces to say, "Go whack those guys," as soon as they finish singing "Oh Canada," and the TV cameras are there to capture it, it's a hell of a way to frame them. And in my opinion, I think we were being set up for a fight with our police by the media coverage. Not that there weren't individual cops who did, you know, bad things at the G20 and who should be reprimanded for that, but the conditions were created to do that, including Tarantanimo Bay, where it was so Kafkaesque and insane that, you know, cops in there were miserable at having to, you know, do that to their own people in those conditions. Some of them, and this is from firsthand accounts from people who were detained there. And then flashing forward from the G20 martial law to the Caravana martial law, which was we just had this weekend, where I also hit the streets Thursday, Friday, and Saturday and Sunday night to sort of take a look at what was going on. And I noticed that the cops' body language, much like at the G20, eased up over the course of a few days from being, you know, an inch forward to an inch back. You know, like just if they move a little forward, you know, the whole place gets suffocated. But if they fall back and relax, then we can ignore them a bit. And even though many of them, including, you know, guys in, you know, big black uniforms, heavily armed and so on, were ordered to literally walk through crowded streets full of young black people they managed to share the flow of traffic and share the space. And I have all this firsthand, and there's 10,000 other witnesses that can attest to this situation. So I'll say this, on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, they started looking at us probably because some of them hadn't seen Caravana before. But by Sunday evening, they were in little circles just talking to each other, like a smoker circle at a house party. And if anything happened, they were right there and they could kill you in a second when they have the weapons and training. But since nothing much was, and it was just a bunch of young people acting a fool and having fun, they chilled out and they helped make Caravana be a good Caravana, despite the fact that what they were ordered to do. So they were ordered to be there, and other people wanted to be there to party, and those two groups managed to make it work a month after the G20 when they were demonized. And Patrick, I hate to go off on this, but it's important in our city because of what most people hear. And so I did a show on it this morning that people can download, where I went through this for an hour and broke down all the details. And just for people out there to know that, what they did at the G20, And what actually happened was that certain cops did X, and then we're told the police did this, the police did that, like all of them did. So that's not true. And if you want to know if several hundred cops and several thousand young black people can hang out at a party, the answer is yes, because it happened over the weekend. So that's some good news.
Did you notice that there was a little bit more anxiety in the people when the police were patrolling in the vicinity as a result of the tension that was exhibited during the G20?
It's hard to say because people were there in the mood to party. So some of the guys noticed and some of the girls tried to ignore it. And I was, again, doing a real social engineering study on this. But yes, there was a bit more tension. And yes, people do, just like during the G20 martial law, same with the Caravana martial law, where there's no IDing there, but there was just a ridiculous police presence, which even the police thought was stupid. From my estimation, just based on the fact that they couldn't believe there was 200 cops at the corner of Yonge and Dundas at 4 o'clock in the morning and 200 people, and the cops are just sitting on the ledge, their just hats are off, they're scratching their heads, they're yawning. They're like, man, I don't even like Caribbean music. I like rock music. I might come through for a minute, but I want to hang over here for 12 hours. Ah, nuts.
Yeah.
I don't party like a young black guy. So, it just, 10 years ago, they were up the street every two streets and 50 or 100 feet back, so close enough to react in seconds and close enough to provide a deterrent presence because we all knew they were there. But, the rest of us were on Yonge Street partying, and it worked itself out. And so this is a little excessive and unusual, and I hope they're not forced to do this again, and I hope we're not forced to deal with it. So I'll say that, yes, on Friday especially, Friday night, the first main night of this, where the cops were a bit more like, got to take my job seriously, got to look at the crowd. People might have been a little less quiet, or a little less loud, rather, and a little more reserved. But through the course of the weekend, they kind of got the drift that the cops weren't looking for trouble. They were just going to, handle something if they saw it. And so people chilled out a bit. It's still an unnatural environment. It is an unnecessarily antisocial environment, both for the police, who with $1 million in training shouldn't just stand there and watch a bunch of young black people, party and trying to pick each other up and play music and act silly. Like, there's just no reason for them to do that. And so I'll say that as the cops got more relaxed, the people got more relaxed. And if you're a cop and you have to hang out there, you'd much rather hang out in a happy, positive environment. And I think they understood that. They understood that, look, if we just chill out, these people are going to chill out, and then there's going to be no trouble, and we'll just, call it a day, and it'll be fun, as opposed to a constant, like, I'm looking at you, and you're looking at me, and I'm looking at you, and you're looking at me, and I got to do that for 12 hours. Like, that's
just exuding that vibration that does nothing but create negativity.
Yeah, and getting that vibration back. And so, absolutely. Any other thoughts on the G20, though? I mean, that was a major, to me, Patrick, and you're a Toronto resident. Were you born here as well?
No, actually, I was born in Dollard des Armeaux, Quebec, and moved up here at the young, tender age of 2. So almost my whole life.
So you couldn't learn French because you didn't learn to talk.
That was it.
That was it. Ah, geez. Another 5 years there and you would have had French under your belt. That's too bad. But any other thoughts on the G20? In my opinion, it was the most traumatic event in the city of Toronto's history. A giant concrete fence through the heart of the city that was completely ridiculous and unnecessary because, you know, the cops or military or spooks or private contractors could have just shot any vehicles approaching the summit. Didn't need to build a damn fence that nobody could get close to because there was cops everywhere. It's just utterly ridiculous. They pretty much evacuated downtown Toronto for a week in the summer. And for the few people that did show up, you know, they felt a bit stifled by the cops aggressively looking for protest terrorist tourists who, you know, we later found out through the course of the G20 were probably provocateurs put there by either the police or intelligence agencies or military or contractors based on the fact that the cops had to let them break their stuff and our stuff. So, you know, the cops got to be scratching their heads going, you brought 20,000 of us to police the city and these guys get to break stuff on TV? Like, what the hell?
Yeah, the G20 was just a massive social experiment, in my personal opinion. And the whole fact that they're just rounding up Canadian citizens for no reason, detaining them for long periods of time without any sort of legal counsel or whatnot, it's just absolutely disgusting. And the thing that makes me laugh the most is that after the whole $2-plus billion was spent on the whole security, here's the cops via the mainstream media pleading with the citizens of Toronto, hey guys, we just spent $2-plus billion of your tax money. Can you please send us your videos and pictures so that we can arrest the criminals? Isn't it sad, BJ?
Yeah, not like they had cameras everywhere. They need our Facebook pictures.
And the cameras, I mean, I haven't gone down to confirm this personally, but I've heard that the cameras that they put up specifically for the G20 are still sitting there.
I've been walking the streets, and yeah, they're still on Yonge. They're still at college in Bathurst. And they're those big gray boxes that you kind of see where cameras, you know, intrusively put there. Not like the ones on streetlights, which are bad enough in the sense of us being surveilled all the time. But these ones, they're actually on the sidewalk in kind of a big gray pillar, a big evil linga. They're still there.
Interesting. Because we were told that they would be taken down.
Well, we were told a lot of things. Look, we were told all that stuff was temporary. I mean, I saw at the...
Cigarettes are cool and fluoride is good for you.
Right. Well, I got so much things to say. I was at the Carabana martial law. You know, I actually said hi to some cops in a minivan right beside me at Peter in Richmond. Just because I happened to be, you know, there and standing and waiting for the light, and I noticed, holy crap, it's you know, six cops in like a mom and pop minivan. And I'm like, ah, geez, they're still using all the unmarks. Like, that wasn't even for the G20. Like, we got to sneak up on people. And you know this from your own investigations, Patrick. Speak to this if you don't mind. But governments, once they get power, they really don't want to give it up.
Yeah, it's not something that they're looking to do. I mean, you spend all that hard-earned taxpayer money to get where you're at. You know, you don't want to get up out of the seat too quick. You know, you got to sit back and relax and enjoy your ride.
Absolutely. Well, you know what? I got this. I'm on the Toronto Star website here, thestar.com, in addition to having your own open. It says here, Toronto police won't use body cams yet, from Henry Stanku. And the article says, Toronto police won't be outfitting officers with body cameras anytime soon, but they admit things are, quote, moving in that direction. And so your thoughts on that, on the surveillance society, what it's for, you know, why are they doing this? Well, first of all, Patrick, I got to say this. If there are bad guys behind the scenes running thing, they clearly haven't won yet because they still want to put cameras up everywhere. They still want to chip everybody. They still want to, you know, they have a bunch of plans, and they wouldn't need to do all that if we were already mentally and physically beaten. So, but your thoughts on the surveillance society?
Well, God save the Queen, and, you know, being sort of like the little brother of England, we sort of see what's going on over there in the 1984 state with cameras on every street corner. And, you know, you got to expect it's slowly going to creep its way into the Canadian society. So it's not really too much of a shocker. You know, I think it's just another way to further the monitoring and the controlling of the citizens, see who's doing what, who's speaking to who and for how long and about what. You know, it's just to... just more control of each. You know, they just want to see what we're doing all the time and why. You know, it's like a minority report. It's almost getting to the point where they're going to start arresting us for crimes that we're thinking about committing, you know, like thought crime.
Absolutely. And there is something called predictive programming. You can see the work of Alan Watt, W-A-T-T, A-L-A-N, W-A-T-T. at cuttingthroughthematrix.com. He's great at explaining it. But essentially, the people behind the scenes who control our culture, control the big trends, and then many artists and filmmakers and musicians and business people and everybody sort of follows along with the trend, kind of make work to reflect that. Or there are intelligence agencies actually behind the scenes doing that. And so films like Minority Report with the naked body scanners are meant to put, you know, or elements of that film are meant to put the idea in our heads, you know, 5-10 years before they're actually brought to life. Because if they predictively program us and they sort of implant things in our minds in fiction when our guard's down, not like the news when our guard's up, but in fictional stories when our guard's down, then the ideas kind of settle in the back of our heads, and then we see them. Then when we see them in our actual reality, we accept them easier because we're at least a little passively familiar with them.
Yeah, they're feeding us reality under the guise of entertainment.
Absolutely. And I'll tell you this, Patrick. I got stopped for a thought crime during the G20. I was out there postering. I was against the protest. I think that, you know, politicians with, you know, fax numbers, phone numbers and emails and portfolios and things they did vote for and things they are voting for or are going to vote for and electorates to appeal to in terms of ridings where you can say to people, look, they're not representing you. I think what they do is they actually tell people, go over there, yell at some cops, get beat up and go home, and then we'll listen to you. And then they don't, because, you know, I think the model is flawed. But you know, when I was in the financial district, I was just walking through with a pissed off look and my headphones and shades on. And I wasn't close to the fence, and I was kind of walking, you know, out of the financial. I was aiming out of the financial district, and I got rolled up on by 6 cops, including a beautiful redhead police officer, just flashed in front of me, going, holding her hand up, sir, can you stop? And I was like, ah, yeah, probably would have stopped anyway. And then there was 5 other police officers there, but they basically got a call about me from, I'm guessing, you know, security or something. I had a big backpack on. I had headphones on. I had a pissed off look on my face and shades. And I literally got stopped for a thought crime as they decided to check out, you know, what my intentions were because I had a pissed off look on my face. So it's you know, and they were nice about it. And the cops were, I got ID'd 12 times. They were nice about it. And so that's my experience at the G20, you know, in terms of, you know, them needing to get that ID. During the martial law situation, like they were like a dog in a bone with that thing. So I gave it up 12 times because after a while I just was like, well, I don't want to, you know, one officer early on said, you don't want us to call intelligence to you. And I'm like, oh crap, I'm going to have a bunch of bored intelligence agents poking and prodding me and going through my blog.
Trying to make some sort of connection to you and Ahmadinejad, I'm sure.
Right, exactly. It's like, he wears a goatee. Do you wear a goatee because he wears a goatee?
They're both slightly shaded of brown. You know, they'll find something huge. These guys are just definitely way too bored.
Well, they are intelligent. They are intelligence agents, so they'll make up something nifty. But yeah, I got stopped for a thought crime, dude. It was completely insane.
And how was that? How did that affect you mentally? Like when you were stopped and asked what your intentions were, how did that make you feel? Like a human being, just being stopped for no apparent reason, and just questioned by this overwhelming sense of authority. Did it feel right?
No, it did not feel right, and thank you for asking. It didn't feel right at all, and I'll tell you this though. I mean, I you know, looking into these things and having, you know, certain ideas on my, you know, on my mind, and listening to a lot of Bob and other people instead of people that depress me and make me think we have no future and I'll never be happy. Like I'm in a better headspace to deal with this sort of thing. But I'll tell you this: on Wednesday, the 23rd. I'm leaving Ryerson, leaving the broadcast here at CKLN Radio. At a Tim Hortons right near here, I started slapping up some posters, and I was slapping them up around here. And 2 red minivans full of cops rolled up on me on the Wednesday morning, about, you know, 10, 11-ish. And that was shocking because I did not expect them to do anything like that this far from the summit itself at the Metro Convention Center in the financial district. And so that was quite surprising. An Asian officer, a white officer, and a female white officer, just 3 of them just you know, surrounding me right by Tim Hortons on some little, you know, poster board electrical thingy where everybody puts posters. And there was 2 minivans. So there was a 2nd minivan full of cops. And when you're not expecting it, and it happens, and it's that aggressive. It's not one officer sort of casually coming up to you. It's three coming up to you all hopped up, you know, surrounding you in a semi-military formation, and then a bunch of others in a van there ready to blow your head off if you mess with these three. That was a little surprising and traumatic, and I went and got a coffee right after that, and I was a little jittery. But the officer did tell me, this is going to happen all day, dude. So, you know, just be prepared if you are going to keep postering. And I was
just take your posters and go home, basically, is what they were telling you.
Well, you know what? Honestly, and this is to the cops' credit, they set a precedent by not forcing me to stop. And by stopping me, by IDing me, by at times searching me, my bag, really. They didn't search my person, so that was good. But they did search my bag, a few times. They set a precedent that said, you know what, you can poster in Toronto, even during martial law. But I will say to everybody else out there, everybody in Toronto, everybody in the freaking world, that this is incrementalism. These are stages. The IDing law was meant to be intimidating. The fact that I wasn't intimidated doesn't mean a lot of other people weren't, because there's nobody else doing this sort of thing. And the next step in this incrementalism is detention. They won't let me keep postering for, like, you know, 15 hours a day next time. Next time they're just going to say, you know what, we're going to have to check you out thoroughly because you have some material on you. We got to see if it's this or what it means. And they'll actually bring me in for, you know, 3-4 hours maybe and completely waste my time and theirs, frankly. But that'll be the policy if this type of thing keeps up. So,
sorry to cut you, VJ, no. But what was the one thing that you continually heard from all the people that were being released from the G20 detention center? They were all told, you know, in some capacity or you know, this is basically what you get for protesting. So it was ultimately like a complete attempt at squashing dissent. And all the polls, and polls are nothing more than ways to shape public opinion, but all the polls that were put out by the mainstream media afterwards were all like, you know, 80% of the people in Toronto approve the police tactics and think the taxpayer money was well spent on security, yada, yada, yada. So just even more psyops in that regard. But it's, you know, it's sad when we can't even take to the streets. And it's like, that's another thing. How good of a job are our leaders doing if this many people are taking to the streets to protest? Like, why do they need that much money on security to begin with? You know, we should be out on the streets applauding them if they were doing a good job, but that's not the case.
Absolutely. Except, you know, I think you're 100% right. Except this was sold as being about the violence from the start. I remember articles in April. The big thing that set me off, and we've been talking about this for 6 months, even though, you know, as a group, you know, the people that kind of look beyond, you know, sort of mainstream, you know, academia, activism and so on, you know, we didn't really do much about it. But, you know, what set me off was the fact that there was going to be 10,000-20,000, you know, police here, 10,000 at the time reported by Globe and Mail in an article in April. And the whole thing was sold as being about the violence. And I don't think that cops should be talking to people like that. I don't think that any Canadian should be treated like that for protesting. But I do think that the whole thing happened in slow motion for me, where I'm like, you're literally going to go to this fight set up by the government with the cops? Like, what do you think they've been told? They're training for this like a football game. You know,
oh, yeah. I was screaming at the TV like it was a football game. Quit showing the burning car looping friggin' 24 hours. Where's the footage of cops manhandling the peaceful protesters? Why does that just dissolve into the background? Yet the same, you know, black bloc criminals over and over again all day, just like 9/11, planes going in the building all day. Dude, it was like a friggin' psyop.
100%, 100%. It was a psyop, and though you know how they work, though. I mean, Patrick, you're a wise man. You are a proprietor of a store that deals with information that reflects this exact situation that plays out a billion times a day on planet Earth, and that is problem, reaction, solution. They create the problem, they give us our reaction. This is an outrage, and they give us our solution. We're screwed even more, but it's the only thing they give us, so we kind of accept it and try to be happy. And with respect to this, I think that the cops were told, you know, just over and over again, in the same way that we were, you know, blasted with images of 9/11 and blasted with the images of burning cop cars and crazy protesters and crazy cops, you know, as seen on TV anyway, actually interacting with them, you realize that, most of them aren't like that, and being on the streets in the city. But I think the cops were just smashed in the head with the idea that protesters are dangerous, protesters are violent, protesters are this, nobody likes them, and if you go take care of them, then everyone will be happier for it, because they're messing up the city by doing the protest here when we're just trying to have a summit. And so the whole thing was a big setup to me, because I'm not saying people shouldn't, you know, protest, although I do think calmly and consistently sharing information with people is a much better idea than going and yelling slogans, you know, with a bunch of other people who already know what you're talking about, and at cops who don't care, and about people who aren't there. So to me, this is a problem reaction solution setup, a classic setup where you get the cops all pissed off at the protesters, you get the protesters all pissed off at the cops, and then things settle down for a bit, you know, for a month or so. And then, you know, we have 1,000 cops in the streets at Caravana, and then we got to go, you know, after all that smack we talked about them, what kind of mood are they in?
And again, just hoping something happens.
Right. And this is the people above the police and above us, the people moving the chess pieces. Like, if they get us to hate our cops and they get our cops to hate us, it's fine for a while until 10,000 of them show up again. And then we're in a crap load of trouble. So, you know,
but the cops, they're our brothers and sisters. They pay taxes. They've got jobs to do. They've got families. They're subject to all this same type of, you know, micro tyranny that we're exposed to on a daily basis. So it's, you know, we got to stop thinking we're two separate groups, man. We're all one and the same. We're both like different pieces in the chess game. You know, it's
absolutely. And nobody's risking their job in this economy. Like, people can say all they want. Why doesn't the media tell the truth? Why don't the cops refuse those orders? It's like, man, you know, you won't even, if you don't buy a DVD from Conspiracy Culture, the store at Queen and Roncesvalles, owned by Mr. Patrick White, who we're speaking to right now. You can go to conspiracyculture.com. If you don't buy a DVD and buy a burner and hand those out, and you know this is going on, and you know that's effective, that's why we can say to 80% of people in Toronto that 9/11 is an inside job and they won't flinch. You know, if you don't do that, if you don't, you know, hand out flyers or anonymously or not, if you don't put up posters, if you don't comment on mainstream article message boards by, you know, trying to introduce, you know, anti-New World Order, you know, information to sort of clarify things. If you don't do any of that stuff, then how can you say, why don't the media do this and risk their jobs? And why don't the cops do this and risk their jobs? So to me, this is not about so much about, you know, what they're ordered to do. But what do we do when we're not ordered to do something? You know, how do we take our spare time to say, not only should we have fun, but we have responsibilities. It's paying rent, and that's taking care of our family and our friends. And part of that is dealing with the corruption that orders things like martial law at the G20. And that would be sharing information in the info war about how the world really works, so we can reject these things. So we don't just buy, like, oh, security, so they get to do this. Like, the word security is a catch-all, all-purpose word for, you know, do anything to them.
Well, exactly. I think, you know, for people who are aware of this type of ongoing, you know, the first people we need to approach are our immediate family and our friends, because they're the first people who are going to listen to us. But we do ultimately have a responsibility to at least let other people know that this type of stuff is going on. You know, they're not going to hear it from the mainstream. They're not going to hear it from the government. They're not going to hear it from their television. So this is what we're doing. This is what you're doing, Beej, with your radio program. This is what I'm trying to do with our bookshop here, is just have the material ready and available for the people, because you can't make someone quit smoking. You can't make someone go on a diet. It's just like this. You can't force people to accept information as reality until they're ready to do it for themselves. So we're just pushing it, man. We're trying to peddle the truth. And when the people come knocking, we're here to sell it to them, you know?
Absolutely. Well, here at thestar.com again, I have another article from healthzone.ca, their health website, which, you know, I got to say, you know, it may give you clues as to what to look for at the Conspiracy Culture DVD and bookstore. But because the mainstream media will do that, like, they'll report on half the story. And as Bob Marley said, half the story has never been told. And so, you know, we've got to kind of run with it. But it says here, cancer cells slurp up fructose, U.S. study finds. And it says pancreatic tumor cells use fructose to divide and proliferate, U.S. researchers said Monday in a study that challenges the common wisdom that all sugars are the same. And fructose, for those of you out there who don't know, it's a form of sugar that's in things like Arizona iced tea, in the vitamin water that we see advertised everywhere. And the Washington Post had an article last summer that says, fructose has high levels of mercury in it, which is really bad for our brain. So that might be one reason why it's so heavily promoted in our culture by the people that want to, you know, dumb down, dehumanize, rob, and kill us. If the Georgia Guidestones and, John Holdren's work, Obama's science czar, and Henry Kissinger's NSSM 200 National Depopulation or International Depopulation Program study released in the 70s and more are any clue. Patrick, your thoughts. I mean, if somebody was to read in the Star that cancer cells slurp up fructose, U.S. study finds, and then they're all worried about fructose, is there anything they could find at your store to make better buying choices, to make sure that they can, you know, preserve their body and their mind and be in the position to deal with crises, both personal and political?
Absolutely. We've got a nice beefed up health and environment section that covers all that type of subject matter, from the vaccines to the genetically modified organisms to fluoride to mercury fillings to this, that, and the other. We always joke around and say it won't be long before we're shut down, because we seem to be the only place in town that's offering up this type of information.
Yeah, and in fairness, I think you might be. I mean, there's a couple of others that have, sporadic, bits and pieces of truth, I suppose, here and there. Truth about the conspiracy, which is the truth in the sense that, we all kind of know now that international corporations are working together, and there's been, complaining about, the loss of our water rights and loss of our sovereignty and loss of our resources and loss of our control over our country through, international agreements that allow, international globalists and corporations to basically write policy, have the bodies they control, like the UN, IMF, WTO, and so on, get countries to sign treaties that strip away power from our elected officials and us. And so, sometimes they can't make good decisions. We have Bill C-30, C-36 now, which is the fourth reincarnation of Bill C-51, C-52, and Bill C-6. And there was one before that, to restrict our access to vitamins, herbs, and supplements, make them available only by prescription, and thus promote only big pharmacide cures. So,
and that's the one where if you're growing chamomile in your backyard, you're basically treated as a terrorist.
Yeah, Krakow-style regulation says that they can attack you with a SWAT team. And this has happened in Canada. I spoke with Kevin P. Miller, filmmaker of Generation X and also A Question of Sovereignty. I recommend you look into kevinmiller.com for his work, because A Question of Sovereignty deals exactly with that. And he interviews health food providers who've been attacked by SWAT teams for selling chamomile.
Yeah, and people really need to look into the whole Monsanto and their Terminator seed and their genetically modified seeds. Check out a video online called The World According to Monsanto. It won't take you too long to watch it, but it'll definitely give you a whole new perspective on what's going on with the seed industry.
Patrick, that's great. And we are speaking with Patrick White, W-H-I-T-E, proprietor of the Conspiracy Culture book and DVD store at Queen and Roncesvalles in downtown Toronto. Go to conspiracyculture.com for more details on that. Patrick, in the last 5 minutes, I know that you've been inspired by people to do what you do, people who have peers, passion, persistence, and proof, and who courageously risk some of what they have and take up a lot of time to provide the rest of us and the world at large with information that we can use to deal with reality as they found it, and as many of us have too. So can you shout out some of the people who you recommend, who you're inspired by?
Well, I don't want to play favorites, because, I find inspiration from so many different people from so many different reasons. But, one of the guys that I was reading from back in the day was Anthony C. Sutton. The Best Friends Money Can Buy, Introduction to Skull and Bones, Wall Street in the Bolshevik Revolution, Wall Street in the Rise of Hitler. You definitely check out him. Nesta Webster, she's written some really good material. Carol Quigley, Tragedy and Hope, Anglo-American Establishment, Rise of Civilizations. and definitely check out G. Edward Griffin's A Creature from Jekyll Island if you want to know why our economy is constantly failing.
Absolutely. 70% off signs at the Eaton Center, plus take an additional 30. These people aren't trying to make a profit. They're trying to make rent these days. So things are hitting the fan, but fortunately, you're fanning the flames of what we can do about it. And any other websites to shout out for people, you know, in terms of regular information where they can find it, conspiracyculture.com, of course. But anything else? I just want to make sure that, you know, I give people a lot of info, but, you know, what are you suggesting people check into?
Well, you can check out a website called rents.com, R-E-N-S-E.com. You can check out AbovePopSecret.com. You can check out HenryMacow.com, Henry, M-A-K-O-W. You can check out, again, Conspiracy Culture. You can check out InfoWars. You can check out, you know, if you're a local Toronto citizen and you want to get involved in some activism and whatnot, you can check out the Toronto Truth Seekers website. Check out Dan Dix from Press for Truth, the local guy covering a lot of stuff that you won't see in the controlled media. And
Victor Fletcher's Toronto Street News and InfoWars.com and NaturalNews.com. Plenty more. Patrick, sorry to cut you off. We are getting to the end of our time here on air. And any final thoughts before we go?
Just use your brain, man. I mean, stop relying on the TV and the newspaper to tell you what's going on. Stop living vicariously through the media and just use your own five senses and even your sixth sense to try to, like, actually see for yourself. You know, it's quite simple to see. You know, you just got to look, open your eyes. It's right in front of you, hidden in plain sight.
Absolutely. Patrick White from Conspiracy Culture, book and DVD store, conspiracyculture.com. I want to thank you so much for your time. Hope we can do this again.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me. I appreciate the time, and thank your listeners for spending the last hour with us.
Wonderful. Thanks, Patrick.
Thanks, VJ.
Cheers.
Cheers.
And again, that was Patrick White from Conspiracy Culture, Queen and Roncesvalles book and DVD store. Strongly recommend you check out his work. Got some hip-hop coming up next. This is BK, a.k.a. VJ, host Mondays through Thursdays, 6 to 7 a.m. of Rude Awakening Morning News Show, plus Word of Mouth Mondays here on Mondays. Hopefully you enjoyed that. Again, there were some websites out there recommended. And, yeah, let's keep in mind what happened here this weekend at Carabana, where, you know, hundreds of, you know, young black or hundreds of cops and thousands of young black people hung out because they kind of had to, because the cops were ordered to, and because, you know, the rest of them wanted to be there and party. And things went reasonably well. And so, you know, the Toronto Sun is a horrible story today. But anyway, enough of me. I'm out of here. Have a good evening, everybody. And, yeah, take care.
Mega City, Toronto. You are now about to take a ride off.